You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Available now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or your favorite bookseller. Publishers Weekly calls Get Scrappy a helpful digital marketing Bible. You can read the first chapter, get special digital extras, and learn more now at GetScrappyBook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Seth Sparks. Seth is a blogger, vlogger, podcaster, and aspiring author. Professionally, he's the head of media and technology for the Member Experience Network, a private community for strategic partners of Nationwide, as well as a partnership marketing manager for national member-based organizations. Seth, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks, Nick. Great to be here.
Can I tell you that you also win the undetermined prize for most concise bio?
I try to keep it short. There's a lot in there, but...
Well, you know, there's different applications for bios. Sometimes they are to inform, you know, a magazine article that someone's writing, but I am looking for something snappy to introduce someone by, so I've gotten those great big beasts before, and I've said, do you have a shorter one?
Yes. So... I will say, too, the profile picture that I provided you prominently displayed as my West Wing Weekly lapel pin. So I did that one just for you.
I'm glad you – well, boy, that's – but you offer short bios and custom headshots. You are confounding expectations everywhere, Seth Sparks. And you reminded me of my opening gambit that was going to be why not instead of just doing a regular episode of the On Brand podcast, let's just scrap my format and go over and discuss Manchester parts 1 and 2.
Yeah, and don't forget part 3 for those of you that don't like West Wing.
Oh, that's the Easter egg for I wonder what the Venn diagram looks like for listeners of the On Brand podcast and the West Wing Weekly. Based on the circles that I know, I would think it might be higher than one would expect. But it was funny because I would call it a little podcast, but it's certainly not little. But it's niche, very focused. But it's funny how many I see people like after S Town and oh, I need the next podcast. What are you listening to? So many people list it, and I actually. Our mutual friend Ann Handley at Marketing Profs, she asked that very question, and someone said, the West Wing Weekly. And she said, do I have to watch the West Wing? Which was an appalling admission on her part. I'm going to have to rethink everything at this point. But yeah. I think that's just amazing and really a testament to the power of both the West Wing and Things Digital as a way of connecting.
Yeah, the community that's sprung up around that podcast with both Rishi and Josh running it is super fun, I will say, as someone who's both on their Facebook site. And I've met a dozen other people that I didn't know before West Wing-wise that I now ask questions to or will talk to about things both West Wing and not related. It's been a fun place to connect, and I'm glad that they got it going.
Well, it's interesting because I keep hoping, and again, this is the odd tangent that listeners of the show either know and love or they're incredibly frustrated by. They're thinking, the Nationwide insurance guy is on. Let's talk about that. But they got They got the this West Wing riff, but is the it reminds me. I keep hoping that with this resurgence of the fan community, that you know we will be treated to some continuation of the West Wing. I always joke about having my my arc for a Netflix series about the Santos administration all mapped out. So anyone from Netflix, if you're listening, we can get started. I come cheap. but it reminds me, it's not unheard of, because actually I was just in bringing this back to branding and the importance of fan communities, reminded of Star Trek, which is after, if you weren't convinced that I was a turbo nerd after the West Wing, all of my West Wing conversations and Doctor Who conversations, which I know Seth can chime in on as well.
Most definitely.
But I'm a huge Star Trek fan, and it's easy to forget about the fact that Star Trek, you know, was kind of this beloved, small, cultish affair early on, and that it was only through reruns and fan-hosted events that it got kind of recast in this larger role. That, of course, led to movies and rebooted TV shows. So who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, Netflix, they've got so many 90s reboots on the way now with Carmen Sandiego and Magic School Bus. So many things popping back up that were around when I was a kid that there's now new versions of for my kids. And it's exciting to see all of that rebuilt. And I know there's maybe a thought around the lack of new original stories that are out there. But for the ones that were really enjoyable when you were a kid, it's nice to see them work their way back around.
Well, it is interesting because I think brands, you know, provide frameworks in a common language. And, you know, I think you could wax philosophical on original stories, but also kind of the comfort food that we can make for ourselves also. And plus, I think it is kind of fun when we can reboot. I mean, Doctor Who is kind of the king of brand reinvention there.
Yeah, and they've got experience with it, and I think they've learned how to do it in a way that you can't say all fans, but most fans seem to accept that rebirth every 3 or 4 years as it happens.
Well, and I wonder too if there's branding lessons that we could. here's where people's eyes will roll if they weren't rolling already, but. When you think about those who don't know, Doctor Who regenerates every few years as a new actor, really brought on for very tactical reasons, because the first Doctor cast was so very old and in so very poor health. R.I.P. William Hartnell. First in our hearts and minds. I wonder if there's something in the lesson of doctors regenerating that brands could think of and embrace as well, too. Because I think sometimes we don't change as often as we should, and we use the kind of cling to the maxim of throwing the brand out with the bathwater, but those frameworks that we talked about are still very much in place. The doctor is the doctor. There are set things that continue that I think we can do also.
Yeah, there's definitely a through line that exists for all doctors. And if you want to get business jargony, his why statement hasn't changed from the first episode to where we are today. He's there for a reason, and he continues to live on that. But with every incarnation of doctors that we get, they do it their own way. They have their own mannerisms. They change up their brand, the face of it, in a way that either connects differently with the culture of the time or finds a new way to tell the same story that is just as exciting and different. I mean, we're humans. We, although we are fearful of what's new, we're attracted to it as well. So it's got to be some lessons in there.
Well, I do. I think that it's kind of a great lesson in brand flexibility. I think that the business jargon strangely fits with the doctor, that it's a great example of how we need our brands to be more dynamic today. And if they don't move, if they don't stretch and bend and pull, they may not go where the rest of society's going either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So see, this is what happens when a couple of Doctor Who fans sit down at the microphone talking with one another on a Friday when, you know, your mind kind of wanders in that direction because there's a new Doctor Who on tomorrow. So
it's exciting after the break that we've had for the last year plus of episodes that we've got some new love coming at us. So
absence makes the heart grow fonder.
Yes.
So as we meander, and that's certainly what we're doing, as we meander back to the world of branding and marketing, when you're not listening to the West Wing Weekly, watching the West Wing, watching Doctor Who, talking about Doctor Who, what is it that you do for Nationwide?
Yes. I am in a small department of a giant company, Nationwide. I think most people will know it offers insurance and financial service products to everyone in the United States. That's why we're Nationwide. But my specific area is the strategic partnerships department, and I am in what is called traditional affinities. If you have ever gotten a offer letter for a discount on products because you are a member of a thing or a graduate of a place, that is affinity marketing in its simplest term. So my area partners with different organizations throughout the U.S. To help support their benefit offerings their compensation, everything that kind of keeps their business going. That is the traditional affinity model. Where I spend my time is actually on, as you mentioned earlier, the Member Experience Network. It's a new idea that we've been working on now for a couple of years to add some different value, some utility, if you will, to all of those organizations in a way that's different than what they're used to.
I'll talk a little bit more about that Member Experience Network and kind of its charter and how you bring that to life.
You bet. So what we started noticing at probably the end of 2013, the groups that we had partnered with and the state of the digital world especially had sped this up. We were getting a lot of questions. Nationwide, of course, a Fortune 100 company. We've got a lot of resources. We're using things that a lot of our partners were still trying to figure out. So we would get questions on, how are you doing this? What are you doing there? And then it also tied into, well, what are you doing for direct mail? And what are you doing for just engagement of your members Nationwide? We don't have policyholders. We have members. We attract new members, we retain members, and so our membership model is in a way similar to the organizations that we serve. In all of that, we decided that there was opportunity for us to take what we know and educate our partners in a way that adds value to their organization through how we've got it set up as a six-step framework around engagement that's supported by replicable best practices in specific areas around fundraising and direct mail and digital media, all the things that nonprofits, member-based organizations typically do. So we've got that educational component, and then we've got this collaboration element where we're trying to bring together all of those organizations to allow them to ask questions, cross-pollinate ideas, do those kinds of things to really more robustly help them with everything that they do.
So is there a digital community that supports this?
There is a digital community on the way. We have been building it for about 6 months now. It will be released in June, and it will be the hub of activity for all things Member Experience Network.
And you also, I think the other beyond the potential digital piece is the the event that you do. I think that convening people is a very powerful way, especially in this day and age where we end up so disconnected, to be in touch with your brand. I think is very powerful.
Yeah, it's fun because there really are two ways we deliver all that education to our partners. There is what we kind of refer to as a hosted training, whether that be in person or online. We're lucky to have a team of 8 relationship managers that can travel out and host any of the educational sessions that we have for our partners. We do that through custom partner workshops, where we might go out to an individual partner that has maybe 200 local chapters throughout the United States, and they're having their annual event. We can go in and host one of our sessions for all of those chapters to allow them to experience and improve on whatever that topic might be. We also have topical-based sessions where we might bring in 20 different partners to talk about direct mail marketing. And then we have a couple of kind of annual events where, again, we're bringing in a number of partners to go over either a single topic or multiple topics over the course of a day or two. So there's a lot of that in person, and then online there will be a lot of self-training, whether that just be our blog posts, the white papers we've released, podcasts or videos, or an actual at Nationwide we call it iDrive, but it's just through kind of a cornerstone online learning backend where you can go take your online course yourself, do it at your own speed, and hopefully take away all of that information and put it to use at your organization.
Well, that's so cool, I think. And I think that a lot of brands might miss creating this kind of connection because to some, especially in a sales mindset, you know, might think, well, we've got to just be selling more of the thing. Whereas this member network based on education, based on experience, is really adding value to the relationship in a very different way. And it's a slower build, a slower burn, but I would have to think that that creates a much more powerful connection over time.
We're hopeful that it does. From what we've seen on our returns so far, it has definitely allowed us to expand our relationships within the organizations that we work with. Used to be that we might know our main contact and someone above them. By branching out into all of these areas, we have a tendency to increase our depth of relationships and breadth as well into the people who are actually doing the jobs of those functions. So we might know their social personnel better than we did. We might know their fundraising person better than we did. And those connections tend to speed up the work that we're already doing because we know them, they know us, and there's that relationship. But it also allows us to facilitate the relationships that allow us hopefully a better response when it comes time to renew our deals. We have multi-year deals. A lot of times when those come up, there'll be RFPs, just like in every other B2B area. And as those partners start to renew, our hopes are that what we've done for them helps us stand out. And it's not just, hey, let's look at what the dollar sign is on this one versus this one. Nationwide doing this thing for us that no one else is, and that's worth a lot to us.
Well, and I also, think that as you noted, you are building deeper into the company too, and into your members, as opposed to, you know, just the limited contact that you might have in a more traditional relationship as well. So you are not only demonstrating value to who your primary contact would be, but they're bringing others into the fold who might not be a part of that under more traditional circumstances. Is that is that a correct assumption there?
Yeah. Yep. Very much so. Kind of as you alluded to, the beauty of it is we don't really have anything else to sell them. We're really not selling in the first place anyway, but we're not doing this to be able to say, oh, come buy this package of consultation that we've got. I don't think I've even heard the monetization word pop up as we've built this over the last 2 years. So it's been nice just to do it that way. But we are upfront with partners saying, this isn't just for you. We assume that when you do these things better, when your marketing channels, your Facebook reach organically rises, and when your direct mail lists are cleaner and your retention rates improve, that helps us out as well, because as we promote our insurance to your members, everything you do better helps us do better as we kind of pass that along. So there's some transfer of properties, but we're definitely upfront saying, I mean, yes, it'll help us out too, but it is for you.
So when your brand is as intangible as the Nationwide brand is to some, how do you go about creating meaning for that? How does that kind of live and breathe internally in what you do and in what others do at Nationwide?
For our program specifically, it is almost solely something like this that adds that element of touch and feel to what we bring. From the insurance product side, our goal is, while we may not be the cheapest, the best value is what we strive for. It's kind of noted, a noted saying, I can't even think of who says it now, but the cheapest product is not always the best value. And that's kind of the mindset that we have. So the people that you get to interface with at Nationwide, should that be either a need of the moment or your preference as a customer, what we offer in our consultation, both upfront when you're sold, but also throughout the life of your policy, doing our Nationwide on your side reviews, if you should have to have a claim, our people are top notch. And that's really where the tangibility and the value of Nationwide comes in.
That's so interesting too. And it is kind of creating that value in a different way, which kind of directly relates back to what it is that you spend most of your time on logically. So are there other ways internally that Nationwide communicates the brand, I hate the brand standards, because that usually conjures up the awful style guide of, you know, how much clearance the logo needs, which is necessary, of course, but that is not what I am, what my mission in this podcast is to discover. Yes. Everyone's logo clearance, which I'm sure is some sort of online project that someone has dedicated their time to. Mm-hmm. But it's not me. I'm more interested in about how it's communicated, you know, what you stand for, what the, for lack of a better word, what the Nationwide way is.
Yeah. We, of course, have... Sorry, moving away from my mic. We, of course, have our brand values that are up on all the walls, but we have really a way of speaking and a way of communicating both internally and externally that I think really normalizes and humanizes us. We have guidelines that say, talk simply and don't use big words. Don't overcomplicate. Use bullets instead of paragraphs. Use pictures instead of words when you can. Just all of those little things that tie into how people want to be fed their information and how we are supposed to both internally and externally communicate our ideas, our value propositions, those kinds of things. So internally, specifically with what we're building for the Member Experience Network, as we are sharing information out to our partners through our newsletters, we are trying to, in ways, deliver the information to them so that they don't even necessarily have to click through to where we're sending them. there are great newsletters out there that just do a headline and a link. I mean, Scott Mahoney, Chris Penn, all of those are wonderful, and there's so much in them that they just have to link out. But with ours, we don't know how much attention the newsletter is going to get. So if we can give them two paragraphs and they can get exactly what they need out of that, and we can give them eight sections, speeding up that transfer of idea from what we're sending to what they're getting, and making that as simple as possible is really what we strive for.
Well, and I think that that's so key because, you know, some would say bullets instead of paragraphs, visuals instead of words, would say, that's what you'd say anywhere. But I think that the outcome that it has when you take those guideposts and apply them to really what your business is, that leaves things, they're much more approachable is what you end up with at the end as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the approachability, and we always try and communicate in a way that is a little bit maternal, trusted, of course, because we're insurance, just in a way that makes you feel comfortable with us, both in sharing what you're doing, but also in how you want to interact and be able to feel every time we close out a call that you've satisfied what you need, just like when you've gone to your mom with a question when you were a kid. That's kind of our conversation internally when we're talking about how we're communicating. Like, if someone leaves this conversation, do they feel that sense of comfort when they've walked away? And we hope that we delivered that.
Well, I think that that's so key. And to me, the things that we just talked about, the way of talking, I mean, that informs everyone, even that is responsible for communicating on behalf of the brand and the values that might not be in what you'd think of as traditional branding and marketing roles. But to me, that's why I kind of, made a slightly snarky comment about the logo's clearance, because that's, of course, important. But what you just outlined, those kinds, being able to distill how we talk as a brand, not even like, we use these words. I mean, those are, those frameworks, again, are things that anyone can use and create a very consistent fabric of communication that everyone can be a part of.
Yeah, and everyone knows the quote, people will forget what you said, what you did, but they'll remember how you made them feel. When we approach our communications, it's always like that communication piece. What feeling is that going to derive? Is it the feeling that we want? And it seems silly to do that with a single or two paragraph or paragraph and four bullets, but even that little bit, is it adding value? Is it something that they're going to remember when they've read that? Are they going to take it with them in a way that says, oh, that's really good. I didn't know that. I either want to save that or note it or click through and read more. I mean, it's something as simple as that, but trying to attribute some type of feeling to either having our team reread it or someone external of our team and provide opinions, feedback on something as small and simple as that, I think has done a lot for us in executing on that hope.
Well, yeah, and I think, too, that when you talk about that they're going to remember how you made them feel, I, as a, and you, as kind of branding and marketing wonks, that means something to us, but that's a hard thing to share with all your employees, with, you know, at a big meeting. So we're going to inform how people feel. But with those very tactical steps of how to communicate, I think you end up, the byproduct there is how one feels after interacting with the brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in communicating with employees too, there's a new book. I'm going to plug Brian Jeff Eisenberg, Be Like Amazon. Roy Williams also helped out on the authoring of it, but they get into talking about brandable chunks, and you go from a why statement into I believe statements. There's a lot of cynic talk in it, but it gets into Nationwide. So again, I said Nationwide believes that the lowest priced insurance may not always be the best value. You flip that into a brandable chunk and say, no, we're not the cheapest, but we're the best value. When you tell that to employees and you say, no, you have the freedom to express yourself in those ways. You can do that for the list of the 14 different I believes that you have as a business and turn those into those statements that the employees can then work at communicating when they're on the phone with a potential member or when they're on a call with each other. It's living those values and those we believe statements that really become core to your culture, and finding a way to ingrain those either through the employees that you have now or through the hiring of new employees as you move forward really establishes that culture that helps you be who you are.
I love that. Well, Seth, as we are who we are here on the On Brand podcast, we have already come to our time and ask our question that we always ask at this time, which is there a brand that has made you smile recently?
Yep. And being, of course, a listener of the pod, I know the question's coming, and I spent entirely too much time thinking about it. I've gotten to a point with big brands that I almost feel like they're my kids at times, where one minute they're doing something that just makes me smile and happy, and the next they're doing something that I just do not understand. So I don't have cable at home. I'm a cord cutter, as they say. So when I traveled this week, I got to experience a little cable TV, and an ad that made me laugh literally out loud was the Arby's new I Need a Hero ad, only it's I Need a Euro. For whatever reason, not being exposed to commercial advertisements all that much, I was just sitting there in my hotel room and I about lost it. So that ad in itself was funny. But in terms of, I guess, just brands themselves, I'm so much more interested in humans lately, people creating things. So they kind of exist as their own brands. So creators online, like so my example I want to share is the Nerd Writer. If you don't follow the Nerd Writer on YouTube, you should, as Nick Westergaard and listeners out there. But I think you would enjoy him because he does video essays on everything from film to music to TV to culture, and the way that he breaks down his thoughts and ideas, it's just a wonderful 10 to 12 minutes of you never know what you're going to get out of him, but everything that he makes is just fantastic. So he's my plug, not so much a brand as a person, but definitely worth checking out.
Awesome. Well, this sounds like I need to get to know this Nerd Writer a little better. Seth, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Start at Seth M. Sparks on Twitter. That will get you over to my site or any of the other handles that I might use for various purposes online. And I'm always happy to connect with anyone that might have a question.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to that in our show notes. Seth, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Thank you, Nick. Great time.
And before we go, I always like to turn the microphone around to our community. Recently, AQ's Blog and Grill gave us a shout on Twitter for our episode on legal insights your brand needs to be aware of with the one, the only Carrie O'Shea Gorgone. Thank you, AQ and Carrie, for being a part of that episode. And as a reminder, links to everything that Seth and I talked about can be found over at branddrivendigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show via iTunes and Stitcher. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. And as mentioned, On Brand is brought to you by my book, Get Scrappy, which, among other stories, features the story of the Nationwide Columbus Marathon. So be sure to check out that topical read and leave a review on Amazon if you haven't done so already. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I will see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.